Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, April 24th. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, North Coast Farm Bureau seek Trump administration intervention on Eel River Dam, a North Coast town hall with Chris Rogers, and commercial hazardous waste believed to be originating from the Bay Area dumped in Mendocino County. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. The future of the Eel River is at a critical juncture as calls for the Trump administration to stop the dam removal of the Potter Valley project has furthered debate among environmental groups, farmers, and water managers. Alicia Heyman, director of Friends of the Eel River, joins us to discuss a complex issue of water security, ecological restoration, and infrastructure safety.
For 30 years now, Friends of the Eel River has been working for the recovery of the wild and scenic Eel River. And basically, since we were founded, our primary focus has been to see the dams in the Eel River headwaters removed. Among the many problems that they cause for the watershed, one of the more significant issues is that Scott Dam, which is the farther upstream of the two dams that comprise the Potter Valley Project, Scott Dam blocks access to over 280 miles of really excellent steelhead habitat. And, you know, steelhead on the Eel are famous for being these incredible athletic fish. And we have a remnant population of summer steelhead that are actually trapped behind that dam that we have a real opportunity here to revitalize by giving them access to the sea again. There's a number of other problems with the dam, but that's one thing that I always like to share with people because it is just such an exciting and hopeful opportunity.
The recent appeal by North Coast Farm Bureaus to the Trump administration frames dam removal as a threat to water security. But Heyman argues the real threat is the aging infrastructure itself.
It's really interesting to see them make this appeal that involves this safety element, because in requesting that the Trump administration halt or prevent removal of Scott Dam, these entities are really turning a blind eye to the existing very serious dam safety elements that we face at this project. It's no secret that 100-year-old infrastructure starts showing its age at some point, and PG&E has made it pretty clear that they are highly motivated by the dam safety concerns that have caused them to change the way they manage the project. They can no longer completely empty the reservoir, nor do they completely fill it. They have some gates at the top of Scott Dam that they'll never raise again because of the concern of the weight of all that water on the dam. And the structure is rated as a high hazard facility. That means that if it fails when the reservoir is full, it's going to cause fatalities downstream. And, you know, so to say that there's this health and safety element to keeping the dams is really, really backwards. You know, one thing that we have seen for years and years in the media is people claiming that there are 600,000 people who rely on this diversion, and that is not true. There are 600,000 people that are served by Sonoma Water's water system. There are a large number of people who rely on water in the Russian River watershed, but the truth is that Lake Sonoma, the larger of the two reservoirs in that system, holds water for multiple years, and most of those water users get their water from that source. There are, of course, agricultural interests that do rely on this diversion, and it's in their best interest to embrace this new proposal to have a more reliable diversion from the Eel that happens during the wet season. You know, yes, they do have the problem of water storage because they'll be receiving the water during the season when they don't necessarily need to be using it. But another issue with Scott Dam is that all of the sediment that's accumulated behind the dam threatens to collapse and block the only water outlet. And that makes for an incredibly unreliable water supply system. So the idea that water users are fighting to keep in place a system that is both extremely hazardous, but also provides for an unreliable water source for them is really, bad for their northern neighbors, those of us here in the Eel watershed and folks who live in communities like Hearst, but it's also really doing a disservice to their own interests.
Heyman weighs in on the likelihood the Trump administration will heed those calls and what that would mean for those who continue to advocate for the dam removal.
I'll say this, I would be applying a certain level of rationality to this decision. I would be surprised if Trump was interested in putting forth the hundreds of millions of dollars that are necessary to upgrade the facility just to make it safe. The name of the game right now for his administration is cutting costs so that they can also cut taxes to the wealthy, right? They have to stop spending so much money because they're going to be taking in a lot less money. So the idea that they would choose to take on a project that is going to be quite expensive to bring it up to a standard that isn't threatening people's lives, I would be kind of surprised by that. That's applying a certain level of rationality to his decision making. And there have been a lot of nonsensical decisions made recently. And I do have some concerns that he might jump on an opportunity to stick it to the enviros, if you will. I will add, however, that the Trump administration is really not supportive of hardly anyone right now. If they can't come around to supporting farmers in Iowa, why would they want to support the wine industry in California? And that's really what they would be doing by agreeing to this proposal from the Farm Bureau. I would overall be surprised if he took this on. If that unlikely event did occur and say he ordered maybe the Bureau of Reclamation to take over the project, we would be shifting gears significantly. I would hope that the California Division of Safety of Dams would engage in a real serious manner to really emphasize how the risk that any agency operating this project is taking on, and it would significantly change our strategy.
At the heart of this debate is a proposed diversion plan that aims to balance ecological needs with agricultural water requirements. Heyman shares the Friends of the Eel River's view on the proposed diversion.
I will start off with two clarifying statements. One is that dam removal and people are calling the New Eel Russian Facility, or NERF, that's the term that we're using for this new diversion. Those are two separate things. PG&E is in charge of dam removal, and they are pushing ahead with that, with or without a plan for a future diversion. Separately, but on a parallel track, is the plan for this new diversion, which was developed by a coalition of stakeholders that includes Sonoma Water, the Mendocino Inland Water and Power Commission, Round Valley Indian Tribes, Humboldt County, California Trout Unlimited, and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Those seven entities have negotiated for several years now to come up with this plan for future diversions. Now, as far as what Friends of the Eel River would prefer to see, to be honest, we would prefer to see all of the Eel River's water stay in the Eel River watershed. However, looking closely at the water availability analysis that some of the consulting engineers did over a period of several years, we see that there is an amount of water that the eel can spare without causing ecological harm to the eel. And the run of the river diversion infrastructure that's been designed still allows for fish passage. It doesn't create a reservoir, which comes with a number of ecological problems like sediment starvation downstream of the reservoir, mercury accumulation, creating an ideal habitat for invasive species like the pike minnow. So having the run of river diversion and having a diversion allotment that only allows for what the eel can spare without harming the river is something that we can live with if it means an agreement for timely dam removal and getting those steelhead and Chinook and lamprey, like allowing species to move back and forth past the former project location. We recognize that without this deal, those water users might continue to fight dam removal, which, when PG&E presents their final plan to FERC this summer, it could mean that FERC then spends years sifting through complaints and, looking at so many different kinds of interests and comments that we really lose a precious opportunity to protect the runs of steelhead and other native fish in the eel that we have right now. So for us, time is of the essence. And we also appreciate that the diversion deal includes a number of metrics that really require water users to show that they're making progress towards self-sustainability within their own watershed. So it's likely that in 30 years, or possibly as long as 50 years, when this deal is reevaluated, it may end at that point, which is something that we would be really pleased to see.
Turning to Mendocino, state transportation officials are sounding the alarm over a troubling and dangerous trend, illegal dumping of commercial hazardous waste along Highway 101 in Mendocino County. Just this week, crews removed 19 barrels of toxic material from an embankment near the Empire Rest Area, south of Leggett. Barrels that were just feet from spilling into a creek that supports local wildlife. Officials say this is part of a growing pattern that began in November, and they're now asking the public for help in stopping whoever is behind it. KZYX's Elise Cox brings you the details.
In local news today, state transportation officials are asking for help to curb a growing problem. Illegal dumping on Highway 101. On Monday, crews removed 19 barrels of hazardous waste from an embankment just south of Leggett, near the Empire Rest Area. Danny Figueredo, a hazardous materials manager for CHP, said the barrels were found only 10 feet from a steep drop-off into a creek with fresh running water. If the barrels had fallen, it would have been disastrous, he said. The string of incidents began in November with illegal dumping occurring twice in Hopland, then again last month in Laytonville near the Shamrock Ranch, and most recently south of Leggett. Figueredo said the hazardous material appears to have originated in the Bay Area, possibly from an old construction or roof insulation company in Livermore. If anyone has information or has seen any suspicious activity regarding the dumping of barrels of commercial hazardous waste along US 101 in Mendocino County, please contact CHP at 707-932-6100. That's 707-932-6100. For KZYX News, I'm Elise Cox.
A town hall event featuring Assemblymember Chris Rogers in Casper promises to bring critical issues to the forefront.
As you may know, we have a new Assemblymember, Chris Rogers, who was elected in the November election and has hit the road running, representing the district. And so it's an opportunity for us to get to know Chris on a level outside of a campaign.
That was Peter McNamee from the Grassroots Institute, the nonprofit co-hosting the upcoming town hall. McNamee gave an overview on what the Grassroots Institute does to facilitate community conversations in Mendocino County.
We're an all-volunteer organization based in Mendocino County with about 800 people who are in some way involved in community and civic activities in Mendocino, and we function in a rather unique kind of way. Not many organizations do this, but the Institute itself is, its mission and vision is to focus on education and particularly self-education, the public educating itself, and defining the challenges that the community and people in it need to be addressed here in Mendocino County, and in advocating the solutions that the community feels needs to be put forward, both in the private sector and in the public sector. And the way that we do that structurally is the Institute itself, it acts like kind of a venue for work groups. At any given point in time, we have about eight or so work groups that are involved in the community. And a work group basically is constituted when a group of people come together in the community and decide that there's an issue or concern that they have that they don't feel is being properly addressed in the community and that would benefit from a collaborative effort to make an improvement to our community. And they meet as often and in any fashion that they want. And they educate themselves. They bring in speakers. They read articles. They do sometimes, in many cases, citizen science to develop an awareness of what the problem scale and scope is. And then when they've come to a conclusion about the kinds of changes that they want to see happen in their community, then they take action. The institute itself acts as a host for all of those work groups. It doesn't have an ideological base. It doesn't screen people for their political persuasion. In fact, we operate as a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. And so anybody and everyone is welcome to participate in the Grassroots Institute and to form a work group and to define the issues that they want to pursue and go after them.
The organization, led by volunteers like McNamee, a retired public servant with 35 years of government experience, is committed to bringing people together across political divides. The upcoming town hall will feature newly elected Assemblymember Chris Rogers, representing a district stretching from Santa Rosa to the Oregon border, a massive geographic area with complex, interconnected challenges.
There are, I think, topics at the federal level, at the state level, at a regional level, and topics that are very unique and specific in their application to Mendocino County that we hope we can discuss with Assemblyman Rogers. Let me just touch on a few that I think will come up and be discussed. Of course, climate change is having a huge impact on not just our area, but nationally, globally, and at the state level. We've seen massive fires down in Los Angeles, and we've seen the impacts of sea level rise and much more severe storms that have impacted the state. And one of the outcomes from that is that many people, particularly in the more southern parts of the United States, are becoming climate refugees or climate migrants. And they're moving to places that have much more temperate environments. Mendocino, Humboldt, Del Norte, Sonoma, these are areas because of their approximation to the Pacific Ocean and because that they're relatively northern parts of our state have much less severe impacts from climate change. And I'm sure that your listeners in Humboldt are already experiencing this and possibly in Del Norte as well. And a lot of that has to do with people who are coming from other areas and moving to our area, or they are buying a property here on the North Coast, and in many cases, homes, and then simply leaving them vacant or using them as short-term rentals or long-term rentals. But what that's doing to the housing stock in our area, the available affordable housing stock is just disappearing. So clearly, we have a challenge that starts with climate change and its impacts, not just on us, but in other areas, and how we're going to adapt to that going forward. So we'll be looking for the state to take some responsibility here, since this isn't an indigenous problem to just Mendocino County or Humboldt County. So we're looking for him to talk about those kinds of issues. What's the state willing to do in terms of providing some leadership to help finance the public infrastructure, to build the housing? We'll be looking to him to talk about how we can develop commercial business opportunities for all these new people who are going to be moving to our area. We're going to be looking to him to talk about how the vision for California is changing. How are we going to balance the need for protecting our California coast, particularly in the north area, from rampant development, and at the same time, accommodate all these new people coming in? that we continue to protect and preserve the coastal zone from development, and that we look to developing new coastal haven communities inland that can then access the coast as a recreation greenbelt area, that we continue to protect, particularly agriculture. We're looking to people like Chris Rogers to provide that kind of leadership.
The town hall is set to take place this coming Sunday, April 27th, from noon to 2 p.m. at the Casper Community Center, located on Highway 1, about 10 miles south of Fort Bragg.
The Institute is open as a vehicle for encouraging community and civic activity to everyone, regardless of any qualification. If you can fog a mirror, then you're welcome to be part of the Institute's activities, regardless of your perspective on politics or culture or whatever. We have to talk with each other. If we're going to survive going into the future and to prosper, we all have to be able to sit down together and talk.
For more information, that website again is grassroots-institute.org. This is an opportunity to directly engage with your state representative and shape the future of the North Coast. In state news, Assembly considers bill to target sex trafficking from demand side, criminalizing loitering with intent to purchase sex and strengthening victim services. KPFA's Sophie Reyes-Zelfini reports.
Democratic Assemblywoman Maggie Crowell says her Assembly Bill 379 seeks to reduce the alarming rates of young girls being sold for sex by focusing on two problems.
I want to solve two problems with this bill. One, we have to create more resources for victims like Julie and the thousands of other victims who are being trafficked. And two, we have to crack down on the men who are buying them for sex.
So how exactly will Assembly Bill 379 resolve these two issues? The establishment of the Survivor Support Fund. The fund will be financed through fines collected from offenders. Under the bill, loitering with the intent to purchase commercial sex will be classified as a misdemeanor, punishable by a $1,000 fine in addition to other penalties. The money generated from these fines will go to community-based organizations that provide direct and critical services to sex trafficking victims. Assembly Bill 379 creates a law that allows enforcement to intervene when offenders are out in search for sex for sale. It also makes it chargeable as a felony if those victims are under 18 years old. Between 2015 to 2020, more than 13,000 people were trafficked for sex in Sacramento alone. The average age of entry is 16 years old. Sawan Vadin, a survivor of sex trafficking, is executive director of the Community Against Sexual Harm organization. She spoke about the root cause of sex trafficking.
But we rarely talk about the root cause. So let me say it plainly. If we do not address demand, we are not serious about ending exploitation or trafficking. Because you cannot have a sex trade without sex buyers. And those buyers, they aren't harmless. When survivors think about their own experiences with buyers, it is not the act of being purchased that sticks with them. They recount stories of being dehumanized, abused, and ultimately thrown aside.
By holding the buyers accountable with tougher consequences, the bill sends a clear message that there is no place for exploitation of youth in our communities. Before this bill, sex trafficking legislation made it so buyers were almost untouchable. For example, under the Senate Bill 357 that went into effect January 1, 2023, loitering for prostitution was decriminalized. Its intent was to end discriminatory enforcement, but instead, it sidelined law enforcement altogether. This bill takes a different approach, focusing solely on demand. It allows for law enforcement to intervene when they see a buyer make obvious moves to try to purchase an individual for commercial sex. This leeway strengthens law enforcement's ability to protect vulnerable victims before the offender can do more damage. San Diego District Attorney Summer Steffen shares her insights on the issue.
This bill needs to be remembered as California declaring for the first time that our children are not for sale. It's time that our laws reflect our values. We speak through our laws. The laws must change.
Supporters of AB 379 say it reflects California's commitment to justice, compassion, and accountability. Supporters of AB 379 say it reflects California's commitment to justice, compassion, and accountability by targeting the fuel of the sex trafficking industry while also investing in survivor support. The bill is in the Assembly Public Safety Committee with a hearing scheduled for April 29th. This is Sophia Rysel-Fanny for Pacifica Radio News, KPFA.
In a significant shift in federal policy, the Trump administration has rejected the Housing First model, long considered the gold standard in addressing homelessness, in favor of more punitive and treatment-first strategies. The new approach supports clearing homeless encampments and requiring individuals to undergo drug or mental health treatment, with the threat of arrest for those who refuse. This comes as states like California have already begun implementing measures like care courts, which can mandate treatment and have encouraged the dismantling of encampments. The move has sparked both praise and concern from national experts and advocates. Suzanne Potter reports.
President Donald Trump is rapidly changing homeless response, vowing to force people into government camps and require mental health and addiction treatment under penalty of arrest. According to reporting from KFF Health News, the approach is a rejection of the Housing First policy, which moves people into permanent housing, then offers but does not require treatment. Donald Whitehead is executive director of the National Coalition for the Homeless.
Forced treatment works very seldom. People do not actually react to treatment that's forced upon them versus given the option of going on their own. Criminalization is not a solution. It's not effective, and it only exacerbates the situation.
Housing and Urban Development Secretary Scott Turner has called for massive cuts to the department that coordinates homeless programs. The president supports sweeps of urban encampments, something Whitehead says only disconnects people from homeless service providers and creates misery and distrust. Dr. Robert Marbot is a senior fellow at the nonprofit Discovery Institute, who directed the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness from 2019 to 2021. He says the fentanyl crisis has upped the ante, with many victims found dead in government-funded housing.
You have to get that person off the fentanyl before they get their housing. If not, they should be in a monitored setting so that you can deal with the overdose. If you give a housing voucher out, there must be requirements just like Pell Grant, unemployment insurance, and TANF.
Advocates such as Whitehead say the government needs to adequately fund both emergency housing and treatment, while also building millions of units of affordable housing. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. And thanks to our reporters Elise Cox, Sophie Rysel-Fanny, and Suzanne Potter. KMUN News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from the KMUD studios in Redway, I'm Lisa Music.